Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Andy. I needed to let you know that we are coming down to the wire on RebateJet.com. What's RebateJet? It's a platform I created for you guys, the small to medium-sized sellers trying to compete against those big brands with those big budgets. Go now to RebateJet.com, sign up for that free seller account before it goes away this month. Now, why do you want to be a part of RebateJet? Just a few things. You can list promo codes for free. You can offer 3 rebates free per day. You can list your products and sell them directly to our customers on our website. We even have a free liquidation marketplace for you to unload products that didn't work out. We also have something else crazy in the works. You guys are going to love it. Go now, RebateJet.com. Now onto the show.
Welcome to the Seller Roundtable e-commerce coaching and business strategies with Andy Arnott and Amy Wiese.
All right, everyone, welcome to Seller Roundtable. This is our first inaugural Seller Roundtable, the official first one. The ones prior were a beta test to see if this format would actually work. First guest ever, which is pretty awesome, is Danny Carlson. He's from Kenji ROI. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
You're pronouncing that correctly. A lot of people say Kenji Roy, but it is in fact ROI, standing for Return on Investment.
Yes. That's what I thought. Anybody in the business for long enough should know that. But yeah, I've had people call Seller SEO CO. So, you know.
really with SEO?
Yep.
That is Seller.
Yeah. So yeah, that's it happens. No biggie. Tomato, tomato. So, what we're going to do is we'll just start out with questions if anybody has any off the bat, which doesn't look like there's any yet, but hopefully you guys can do some questions. What I like to do too is just unmute everybody and or actually I can unmute one at a time. You guys can just say what's up if you want to. If not, then you're welcome to stay quiet. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute everyone. All right. Anybody want to say what's up? Nope. We want to stay silent. All right.
It's too early for everybody.
I guess so. All right. Maybe when some more people get in and people get a little more comfortable. I'm surprised we don't have more people off the bat. We had like 40 some people registered, but hopefully we'll get more jumping in. But anyway. Okay, what we'll do here is we'll start out, I guess, with the training since nobody has a question to start out with. And mine's it's kind of basic, but it's actually stuff that is pretty valuable. You know, a lot of times we get people coming to us with various problems, and these are kind of like the breakdowns of of what people come to us with on their Amazon business, and kind of how you can try to avoid those on your own by doing certain action steps. So. Danny, I'm sure you get this too, because you take on clients and stuff, and it's probably you probably see a lot of this kind of same stuff going on. But so a lot of the biggest mistakes I see new and experienced Amazon sellers make is, first thing is they try to do everything themselves, and this is an easy one to fall into. For multiple years on my Amazon business, I did this, and I think it's generally just because you're lazy. You're like, oh, I don't want to go through the hassle of trying to find VAs or trying to build systems for those VAs and things like that. But what I found is once I finally dug in and started doing that, it's actually a lot more lazy to do it that way, because you have a little more setup time, but in the long run, you're getting to offload so much work from yourself that you get to concentrate on the stuff that gives you better ROI. So that's kind of my first tip, is to hire out. And Danny's in the Philippines, and a good resource is onlinejobs.ph, which is a Filipino VA workforce. What I found with online jobs, though, is that you really have to vet. You have to go through, sometimes we go through like 5 or 6 people in a position before we get somebody who's solid and shows up to work and, does a good job. So just, don't give up. If you get a couple people off the bat that aren't very good, just keep trying. You'll find somebody who's good. You also have like Upwork's another one. Elance merged into Upwork. Anyway, there's a bunch of freelance sites out there. FreeUp. Oh, Danny, you got muted somehow.
Did
you?
Oh, yeah, I think you.
There we go. I might have done it when I muted everyone
at the same time.
Sorry about that.
FreeUp. Yeah, like I'm here in the Philippines, and there is dozens and dozens of companies that they hire Filipino workers and then mark them up. And in my experience, I've hired lots of people from sites like that. I've hired lots of people from sites where there is no middleman. I always go with sites where there is no middleman now. I really don't see very much value in the sites that they're either going to add a percentage onto the hourly wage of the virtual assistants, or they're going to give a finder's fee of usually about $500 to pair you up with the right person, when really you should be learning that skill yourself of how to find and hire good talent. That is a very important skill as a business owner beyond just a virtual assistant with so many roles. So definitely look for like virtual staff finder, onlinejobs.ph, or if you're doing it on Upwork, then try to quickly get them paid off of Upwork. So you're not paying that 20% or $500.
Exactly. And another cool tool to combine with those virtual workers is what we use is a website called Hubstaff, which is really cool because it'll track time, it'll automate payments, and it also does like random screenshots so you can make sure that your VA is, you know, staying on task. Because we have seen, you know, VAs will cheat some well. the ones that aren't the good ones will cheat. So you have to kind of keep an eye on them. So that's kind of the first tip. Second tip is, and I see this a ton, and especially around Q4, you get all these people jumping into Amazon thinking they're going to make like a quick buck. And like, I'm selling my inventory, I'm out, you know, like I'm paying long-term storage and all this kind of stuff. And I hate to say it, but it kind of makes me laugh because I'm like, you know, these people who just jump in and jump out, that, you know, I'm sure they do that for every, you know, any kind of business or any kind of thing that they're doing. Amazon business is like no other business. You know, it's like every other business. I mean, you know, you got to put in the work, and if you're not willing to put in the work, then you're not going to succeed. It's just like anything, you know, with like seller SEO. I'm usually in my office building before anybody else. I'm usually the last one to leave. I'm constantly, if you've ever tried to get a hold of me, like I'm constantly on Facebook Messenger. If you own your own business, you got to be willing to put in the time. And if you're a smart business person, you can hopefully, Danny's got an early start. I had an early start as well. But back then you didn't have YouTube and all these awesome resources where you can learn like anything in the world. So I had to kind of teach myself there. Nowadays you can find everything online. So you can get success earlier in life. I feel a little easier, than when I started. But the good thing about that is I have a enormous, tool set. You know, I can pretty much do anything now, to, you know, building a server from scratch to setting up, email servers to, you know, Photoshop to anything. I've pretty much taught myself everything. So my point there is that you got to have dedication and you got to like what you do. If you're just trying to get on Amazon to make a quick buck, you might do it, but if you don't enjoy what you're doing, in the long term, it's not going to work out for you. So, you know, continue to learn and don't give up, you know, so soon if Amazon's something that you're really committed to.
Yeah, this is something, unfortunately, I see a lot of sellers. They come to us looking for, you know, listing optimization services of some kind. And I can tell within the first 5 minutes of talking to them on the phone, whether or not they are really committed to something. Like the mindset of, I need to make this happen, like no matter what, on the first round, is very obvious, right? They don't want to invest in things that are going to make their business go forward. They want to skip on things like inspections. You know, you don't want to skip on your product inspection,
right?
Because you need that. They're just worried about making the first round of inventory profitable. You know, maybe that was okay in 2015 or 2014 to just take profit on the first round of inventory, but probably not. It's a long-term investment making an Amazon business. It's a physical product business with a lot of cash flow.
Yeah,
so definitely takes a different mindset.
Yeah, and that's the other thing too. A lot of people don't realize for like a lot of our products, we don't even make money sometimes for like the first month or two, and we're experienced. But what people don't realize is there's a lot of upfront investment, especially on the marketing ranking side. And not only that, you mentioned like listings. When people come to me, it's funny too. They'll come to me, they'll say like, "I'm not selling." And they'll show me their listing and I go, "Okay, well, this is why you're not selling." And then they'll argue with me. They'll be like, "Oh no, it's totally optimized." And I'm like, "All right, like if you say so." You know, it's like, it's that cracks me up when people do that. They like start arguing with me on it being optimized. And so I, you know, those, when I see that, I kind of laugh, but, yeah. So Don't give up too soon. Plow ahead and stay the course and learn. I mean, that's the biggest thing. Like I was saying, you know, YouTube and all these resources, watching things like this. There's so many resources out there now that if you're dedicated, you can totally make it happen.
Oh, on that note, I just found an amazing new Chrome extension that makes my videos watching so much better. It's called YouTube's or Video Speed Controller, and it works on any video on any website. And you just press like the D and S buttons to speed up the video. Like you press it to it go up to 1.5, 1.2.
Yeah,
speed up. You can press skip ahead 10 seconds. It works on YouTube, Vimeo, like whatever video you're watching.
Yeah.
Because you know I'm kind of obsessed with meta learning. Like it's learning as fast as possible, right?
Totally. So do you have Blinkist? Are you a Blinkist fan?
I don't actually like Blinkist. I find that their summaries, they take all the good stories out. Like they try to take the high level bullet points, but most business books, they use the stories to actually illustrate the point. And it's, I find it just doesn't really get the point across well enough for me.
Audible is my favorite, but I have Blinkist too. Like if I'm just standing in line somewhere, I'll dig into some Blinkist books once in a while.
Yeah. They got me on an annual subscription, so I have it, but I should probably use it.
Right. Okay, cool. The next point is, make sure that, or one of the mistakes is people don't use tools to maximize their return on investment. Like I see that a lot even with our tool, and I'm sure it's true across the board. You know, especially, when you're running a business, what you have to look at is, once again, is return on investment. So, you know, if you're spending X amount on PPC and there's a tool that you can pay like $100 a month, you know, say you're spending $1,000 a month on PPC, there's a tool that you can pay $100 a month for. But it'll cut your PPC costs in half and keep your sales the same. Like that's a no-brainer. But it's funny how many people are like, don't look at it that way. They're like, oh, it's an extra $100 a month. You know, if you look at myself and my various businesses, I probably have like 20 subscriptions to different tools. But what I look at is the ROI. Like if I can get the ROI on it, it's a no-brainer. You know, it's something that you need to invest in. And the more automation that you can bring to your business, the better off it's going to be.
Absolutely. I think this one's kind of a double-edged sword, though, because it is also easy to go very overboard. And I think it's really important to be very diligent and honest about whether or not you are getting a return off that particular software.
Absolutely.
Because at one point in 2018, I had over $2,000 a month worth of software going throughout all of my different businesses. And, you know, most of that was great, but there was a lot of fat that ended up getting trimmed. And I think I knocked $500 or $600 a month off of there pretty easily because your processes change, things change, some things are better. So it's also equally important to be very diligent. Okay, am I actually getting a return off this particular software? Even if it's only $10 a month or $15 a month, that can add up.
No, absolutely. And what we do is every like month or two, I'll just do like an audit. I call it a business audit, finance audit. And I'll go through, just like you said, and figure out which tools we're still utilizing, which tools we're not. Like I just canceled a tool, which is a really, really cool tool called Lumen 5. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it makes like really cool videos. But what I found is that every time I go in there to try to make the video, it would take like an hour for them to produce it. And I would just be like, I don't want to sit here and wait for this, you know? So I just canceled that because I was like, you know, I'm not getting the ROI. I might sign up for it again at a different point, but right now it's just, I don't have the time to invest, into doing that. So, I totally get that point. And that's a good point to, like you said, trim the fat's a good way to do it.
Well, on the flip side, a recent example that I did, recently hired a video editor and I was looking at software to help video versioning, like to see the first draft and then suggest edits and stuff like that.
Right.
And the software I found is only $15 a month. And I'm like, $15 a month for something I can do for free. Like, I could just look at the video and make markups. But if you look at the time, the extra time that I would be paying for the video editor, would be way more than $15 a month. But the brain is telling you, you don't want to have this extra expense.
Exactly.
Something free, right. But for sure, it's gonna save more than $15 a month, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's what I mean in the sense that, like, yeah, find the tools that's a perfect example that's going to maximize your return on investment and if you, time is money, right? So if it's gonna save you a ton of time, then it's completely worth it. All right. Next one is, this is a really, really big one. I see this all the time too. And this kind of, you know, goes back into the Q4 and in the Amazon, groups on Facebook. You're always seeing people trying to unload inventory. People source too much too soon. So, my kind of way of sourcing and the way that I've, tried to teach people who are just starting out, the way I used to source until I kind of knew what I was doing, is I would do like little test buys. So I would go on to, for example, like AliExpress, and I would start researching products, right? And then I'd start finding products that I like. And then I'd go to Alibaba and see how much they were so I could like figure out my profit if I actually ended up sourcing that product. But then I would just buy like whatever, like 10 units or something on AliExpress, throw up a listing on Amazon, and then test it. So I'd test it with PPC, with listing, you know, with my listing being optimized, all that. And a lot of people are super lazy and they don't want to build listings. And trust me, I've been there. It's, until recently, some of the tools that came out, was one of the reasons why I built a listing lightning on Seller SEO, is that I can build like a super optimized listing really quickly. And it's awesome to test products. So go on AliExpress if you can. You know, some products might not be available on AliExpress if it's super specialized, or if you're not sourcing from China, of course that won't work. But, you know, probably 90% of people will be able to find a comparable product that you want to try out. The other cool thing about that is, like, say you want to iterate. So you're like, oh, cool, I've got this marker pen and I love it, but it'd be better if it had, you know, a magnet or whatever. You could still source these pens without the magnet and test the market and then add the feature after the fact and customize it with your logo and things like that. But, if you can test in small numbers first, then you can prove the concept. Then you don't end up, you know, holding the bag with like 1,000 units of something you can't sell or that doesn't have good return on investment.
Yeah, I think that's a really big one too. I would like to look at the flip side of that too, because the more commonly I talk to people that don't source enough to be successful as well. So like they would order maybe, so like ordering 10 units is something to test is one thing, but ordering 150 units when you actually need to order 300 units is a completely different thing, because then you're going out of stock and you're going to be losing your ranking right while you're going out. So I think there's two different mindsets to go with there. You can go with the testing. Okay, I feel comfortable like with a really small amount. Now I can order a big amount of inventory. But so many people make the mistake of just miscalculating how much inventory they need to buy on the first round to avoid going out of stock on the second round if they are successful launching and ranking that product.
Well, so like what we'll do too sometimes is actually do two different product listings. So we'll do a testing product listing and then we'll relaunch with a secondary one with like a bigger batch of units. And then the first bunch of units isn't, you know, it's generic, it's not branded, all, you know, things like that. It's just kind of a test to make sure that there's demand. On the flip side, if you know how to do due diligence and you've been doing Amazon for a while, this is more of a technique if you're just starting out, maybe it's your first or second product. That's a technique that I would suggest. If you're experienced and you do your due diligence and, you know, you figure out your numbers, how much, you know, PPC is going to cost you, the demand, like, from the competitors, if you're pretty sure that you can get to those, you know, page ones, things like that, then you definitely want like 3 months worth of stock is what we usually launch with. That's what we do now, but we're experienced, so we know that. So we'll launch with like 3 months worth of stock. And part of the reason you want to do that is when you do a launch, of course, you don't want to ruin the trajectory. As Danny was saying, like if you're doing a launch and really you want to hit it from every angle and really push that listing hard, if you run out of stock, you'll completely, blast that listing. And this time of year, you have to be even better because of the Chinese New Year. You would have had to make sure you have all that stock, planned out. So, definitely the flip side to that as well. Once you kind of get your feet wet with what you're doing and know what you're doing on sourcing. The next point was kind of, I talked about it a little bit, but a lot of people don't take time for due diligence. So due diligence, if you're sourcing on Amazon, would be things like I said, like PPC costs, looking at the amount of competitors, looking at how competitive the like main keywords are for those products, looking at like feedback on those products. So like if every product in that niche has like 4.5, 5 stars, that might be a hard niche to get into, because it's going to be hard to compete with products that are already really good. If you're seeing a bunch of like, you know, three and a half, four stars, then, you know, that to me, that's, you know, that is an indication of, you know, ability to jump into that marketplace and, or that niche and compete. So that's something definitely to think about. Anything else you want to add to that, Danny?
So specifically opportunities to like suss out competitors that are beatable and easy to beat?
Well, just due diligence. Like when, you know, when you come up, like, especially with like a product idea, a lot of people will like use Jungle Scout and they'll see like opportunity scores 8. Woo, I'm going to source it, you know, but then they like don't do anything after that. And then like I've had a couple of clients do that, and then they get the product and then they go to start a PPC campaign and the cost per click, like the minimum bid is like $5. So, you know, that's where I'm saying, like, do your due diligence, like cover all the different points and you know, act like you're already selling that product and see, you know, kind of build a strategy around that, around the data that's currently available.
Yeah. I think this is a really common one where people go wrong too, because they're personally, I have a very, very long list of due diligence items, and missing any one of those could be a disaster. Like one, for example, I had a call with someone who was thinking about working with us last week, and the product that he wanted to do with us had an active patent on it, and he just never even thought really to do a patent search for it. Yep. I just kind of looked at it and I'm like, that thing's probably patented. It's like one of those weird trendy products. And so I was able to tell him that. And then throughout the course of that conversation, I could just get the feeling that he really didn't know what he was doing. There was a lot of things that he really didn't understand that he should be checking about the Amazon business model. So people like that, I'm not comfortable taking their money. Like, I don't want them to like spend a large amount of money with us, and then just they would just blame us for like everything that would go wrong, when really he doesn't understand his own business model. And like that is incredibly important if you're investing a large amount of money into inventory, into getting everything set up, that so many things could just blow your business up immediately. Like you don't want to get a patented product, you'll want to go on trademarks, look on Google Trends. Maybe it's on a big downslope. Maybe you sourced a fidget spinner right when fidget spinners tanked last year. You guys remember that, or 2017?
Yep. Or the scooter, or the balance scooters, or
That was an even worse one, right? Yeah, it had fires. They're all like lighting on fire and stuff. Oh, geez, they're pretty fun though. I do love those things.
I've actually never tried one. I need to. They look pretty fun. So. Excuse me. Yeah. So that's kind of what, you know, kind of overall due diligence. And like you were saying, we turn away more clients, these days than we take, because of those very reasons. And we don't just turn them away, but I give them kind of action points. I say, all right, you need to learn this, 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 and this. This is what I suggest you do. Like I give them like a lot of times I'll give them like a five point list of like what you need to do. Like I won't charge them or anything, but like you said, I don't want to take people's money when I know that it's going to not be successful. It's not worth it for us. It's not worth it for those people. And it's just not good business. You know, I'd rather send them away, you know, so they can go and work on it on their own and then come back to me like, you know, a month later and say, okay, I've got these things dialed in. Let's do this or whatever. So that's a really good point. Another big mistake that I see is people not running PPC. Like there's some people that don't run PPC at all. And it like blows my mind when I see that. Like if PPC is over your head, which I know it is for a lot of people, at least run an auto campaign. And all you need to do is figure out your target ACoS and then raise or lower your bid to try to get close to that target ACoS. If that's all you're going to do, make sure you're running PPC. If you're not running PPC, you're going to lose. Like, no questions asked.
Yeah, and I would challenge anyone out there who is not currently running PPC, if you think it's over your head, you got to learn this stuff and make it not over your head, because Amazon PPC honestly is maybe the simplest advertising platform out there when it comes to the internet, when you compare it to Facebook ads or Google AdWords. Those two platforms are infinitely more complex than Amazon PPC. It's not that difficult to learn.
Yep.
And it's so important, like Andy is saying, so important to an Amazon business, because it's the only one that is directly connected to your Amazon products that is very easy to track, is actually showing up on Amazon. So if you don't if you're not fluent in Amazon PPC, you definitely need to become fluent in Amazon PPC.
Yeah. And the other thing with Amazon PPC as well, which a lot of people don't realize, like you were saying, is it's the only way to actually get stats on what keywords are converting for your product. So like if you're running an auto or a manual campaign, you can go and pull your search term report and see that, you know, if I'm selling this marker and I see that magnetic, felt marker is my number one converting keyword, then I might want to go back to my listing and give that phrase more love in my listing because that's what people are converting for. So use those search term reports to really, be your guide on where you should be taking your product targeting wise.
Absolutely. To get that same data through Facebook ads and Google AdWords is like some real, real ninja level 10 stuff that you almost need to be like a developer and figure out.
Yeah, for sure. Let's see, would you share your due diligence list? What return rate would you consider optimal for PPC? Are you using it more to test keywords and targeting? Due diligence list, I don't actually have, it's my due diligence list is in my head because I've done this so much. We're actually starting to rebuild all our processes for not only our Amazon seller business, but also for our software as a service businesses. So when I get that complete, I'll go ahead and share that with you. Return rate optimal for PPC. Well, so that's where going back to due diligence. So you have to figure out what your target ACoS is. And if you're a member of Seller SEO, Karen, which I'm pretty sure you are, go to the ACoSinator tool and plug in your ASIN and it'll give you your fees and you can also kind of see what your break even ACoS is. Generally, there's a couple of different theories on PPC. Some people use PPC to break even, and when they break even, their goal is to boost organic ranks. Some people go a lot higher than break even if they're first launching, but most people like to stay, 10 or 20% below break even. ACoS, they actually want to get a return on that, so that's what we shoot for. is 10 to 20% below break even. Let's see, optimal. Are you using it more to test keywords and targeting? So we do multiple. We do, when we first launch, we actually start with manual and auto. I know a lot of people just do auto in the beginning, but we've been doing this long enough to kind of know what keywords are going to convert most likely for those products. Oh, cool. Thanks, Danny. We'll do an auto campaign at a very, like when we're launching, we'll do an auto campaign with a extremely aggressive bidding. Same thing with our manual campaign. So like the first week or two, we get super aggressive and that way we know we're going to get a ton of impressions and clicks. And that way we know like what keywords are going to work, what are not. And then that's when we start trimming the fat and like laser focusing, changing match types from broader phrase to exact, things like that. To laser focus in on what's converting, but at least do the auto campaign to make sure that you're harvesting those keywords.
Yeah, I mean, that data is so, so valuable. Like online business these days is getting more and more about data, and the more companies that have the data, the more you need to have the data as well, because that's a huge advantage, a company that has a lot of data versus a company that has none. It's the equivalent of you running around literally into pitch black versus someone else with a giant flashlight. Like it's so, so important.
Yeah. Yeah. And this last point actually leads perfectly into the last one, which was, one of the other biggest things that people have issues with is they don't have systems in place. And we are super guilty of this. And we noticed that with our Amazon business, as we started to grow, we started to run into all these issues and as we started to hire on staff and bring more people on, we didn't just have this thing to like hand to somebody and say, hey, go get this done. So that's something that we're really focusing really, really big on right now on the Amazon business and especially on our software as a service businesses. We want all those systems tied into place and to be working really well. If you don't know what systems are, they're pretty much kind of what Danny just posted. It's, like a checklist. It's where you could just hand something. Generally these days it's digital, whether it's a Google Doc or Trello or, whatever it is you're using. Airtable is one of our favorites. use something like that where you can literally send a link to a VA or whoever, you know, a new employee if they're, or if somebody in your office or whoever's doing it. And they can literally go, you know, step one, check this, step two, check this, step two, check this, step four or three, do this with this and, you know, details or whatever. So it's a step-by-step, that you can hand to somebody who has, you know, very little training, that's able to, pass that to somebody else. And then they're able to pick up the reins and kind of run with it. And the benefits of course are, you know, increased productivity, able to grow the business, able to scale the business. And then what a lot of people don't realize is when you go to sell the business, if that's your end goal, if you have systems in place, your business is worth like twice as much sometimes because the new owner is going to be so excited that like they can literally just pick up where you left off and you're not an essential part of the business. You're just the person who built it and got the systems in place and, you know, made sure the gears were turning.
Absolutely. I have a challenge for anyone watching this here. This week, as you're just going throughout your regular Amazon things that you normally do, yeah, as you do each task, take a screen capture video of it. Go to Loom, I think it's loom.com or something like that. It's a free screen recorder, and just record yourself doing it and do some talking to get some context as you're doing it, and then to save that video in a document somewhere. Just title it whatever the name this is, like processing refunds or whatever.
Right.
And over the course of an entire week, you will have already built yourself up a pretty good knowledge base from there. And then if you want to flesh it out, then whoever you're going to be assigning that to, get them to actually build out that standard operating procedure themselves, because they're the one doing it. They're the one who can write it in a way that makes sense to them. And as far as tools for that, I've used a lot of different tools for creating knowledge bases. I don't like Google Docs because you can't really search within the documents. I really love one called Notion, which is very similar to Evernote. I use it also in the same way as Evernote if you're just keeping notes and stuff like that. But really, really powerful tool for creating standard operating procedures, shared documents within a team, and just making all of that completely searchable. And it's totally free to start out too. If it's just yourself, I think it's $8 a user on top of that or something like that. But absolutely worth investing in creating standard operating procedures. And Notion is definitely my favorite for that.
Cool. Yeah, I'll have to check that out. We've tried a ton too, and we ended up, we're kind of gravitating towards Airtable. There's so many different tools out there, and I feel like there's new ones all the time. So it's hard because once you get kind of entrenched in one, you start building into it, then they kind of got you locked in. So Airtable is free as well. It's kind of like Trello where you can get like upgrades if you like upgrade, but the basic plan seems to work perfectly well for everything we need to do. So check that out. All right. My list of eight, those were my list of eight, but, something I just thought of, which was cool that, you know, you just mentioned a tool. Like what are your favorite tools, whether it's like for Amazon or for like just your business, like what are your favorite tools that you use?
Favorite tools. I mean, the first one that really popped to mind that I think not that many people know about is more of a task management automation tool. It's called Podio. And it's very similar to Trello. You can set it up in boards or you can set it up in lists and stuff like that, but it's a lot more powerful. It has a built-in program that basically does what Zapier does. So Zapier is like an automation. You know, if the trigger happens, if X happens, then it's going to like send an email to this person or it's going to do this.
Right.
And Podio has one of its own tools built in that's actually more powerful than Zapier. So we have a lot of really powerful automations. For example, if we drag one task from one column into another specific column, then like all this stuff happens automatically behind the scenes. That probably eliminates the need for probably like a 30-hour a week general virtual assistant, just everything we have set up in there.
Yeah.
So Podio is a really powerful one for task automation. I don't necessarily think if it's just you, you don't need something like this. But if you start to scale into a team,
right?
It's like $15 a month or something for everything. And it saves so much time.
Cool. All right. Yeah. Awesome. So one thing I've been like super into, and Danny, you're probably this way too, because it sounds like you're a tool guy, is like growth hacking stuff, like automation, especially. Like I love tools like you were just talking about. I haven't heard of that. So I actually got to go check it out. That's cool. But like anything that will automate things is fantastic. So, you know, if you're getting into Instagram, a really cool tool is iZood. I don't know if you've heard of that. It's InstaZood. instazood.com. And what that'll do is that'll automate like your Instagram. So if you're trying to build an audience on Instagram, you can go in there and say like, okay, like, I want to target, you know, say you're selling, baby things. You can go in and target, you know, people who are, you know, putting a hashtag baby in, or, like hashtag mom life or something like that. You could actually go in with the software and say, hey, I want to follow everybody who's posting, about that. And then hopefully you'll get a follow back. So really, really good, cool way to build your brand on Instagram and do it in an automated sense. Not only that, but, you know, with a lot of these tools, they're kind of like spammy and kind of like black hat. But in this case, because you're actually targeting people who would most likely want to see your products or services, to me, it's a little less spammy because you're actually like targeting people who would be into, into that, that niche.
Absolutely. I actually have a good one that I started using only about a month ago or so. It's a free Chrome extension called Invite All, and it works with Facebook. So it's a really good way to build the audience on your Facebook page is to you just run some basic ads, like $5 ads for every piece of content you put out. And then everyone who likes that ad, then you can use the Invite All Chrome extension to invite all of those people to your page all at the same time. So let's say that, you know, you spend $5 and you got 100 likes on your ad. It's pretty reasonable if you're targeting the right audiences. Then you can use the Invite All Chrome extension and it'll automatically select all the people on there and invite them. Otherwise, you have to go down and click each one of them manually, right?
So yep. I've seen that one. Yeah,
that's a good one. To build it. And you're not paying for people to go like your page from India or something like that. I don't necessarily recommend that.
Right.
You're actually getting people who are interested in your content because they liked it to like your page.
Yeah, cool. All right. Let's see, anything else I wanted to mention? Oh, what was the, you mentioned a video editing software. What was that?
The editing software. Oh yeah, that was, that's the software that we use for video versioning. So when our video editor, when he comes up with the first draft of something, he'll upload it there and then it allows me to make all these annotations on it, comments in certain places for all the changes and revisions and stuff like that. And it's called frame.io. Really makes it a lot easier to go through that whole process for sure.
Awesome. I got to check that one out. That's something we might use. All right, cool. I think we covered a bunch of good tools. Hopefully people can dive in and check some of those tools out. Like I said, one of my biggest focuses right now, systems is huge in our business, and then like automation and then growth hacking. Those are all like kind of the three big things we're working on right now. And I think that like in this day and age, if you're not working on those, you're going to get left behind. Especially on the automated side. So definitely start, digging into that. Any YouTube channels that you're like super into, not necessarily like Amazon related, but like, business related, like Gary Vee or like, is there anybody that you like watch like religiously or listen to religiously, like video or podcast wise?
Yeah. I mean, I try to keep it pretty tight knit these days and only listen to one or two guys or else you kind of, if you're getting a little bit from a lot of different places, then your view is going to be very skewed, right? You're going to have someone's point of view on one thing and then someone else's point of view on another thing. I prefer to just keep it within a very small amount of people. And so when it comes to YouTube channels right now, I'm listening a lot to a guy named Miles Beckler. He's has nothing to do with Amazon. He's all about different digital marketing things. He's really good at Facebook ads. He's really good at SEO and a lot more mindset stuff when it comes to marketing as well.
Yeah, I think I've seen him. He's the guy who's like, this doesn't work, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, he's kind of like is he like a British dude or like Australian or something?
Something like that. He always wears a baseball cap in his video. And yeah, he made a video like calling out ClickFunnels and a whole bunch of other things recently. he's always got a really honest point of view, which is good to see the flip side in marketing sometimes, instead of this is the new hype. No, this is the new hype because I have an affiliate link for this. And
Right. Yeah. one of the ones I really like that I listened to a lot lately, especially like, I got a Google Home Mini and I put it in our bathroom, which people are like, really in your bathroom? Like when I told my mother-in-law that we did that, she like laughed at me. I was like, no, it's awesome. Like I can literally jump in the shower and put on a podcast like while I'm showering. So once again, it's like the ultimate, like, life hack where you're multitasking. But what I usually listen to when I jump in the shower is Neil Patel, and I can't remember the other guy's name, is I think it's called like Marketing Minute or something like that, for marketing school, something like that. Anyway, their podcast, it's pretty awesome. The reason I like it is it's super short. It's like, you know, 7 to 10 minutes long, and they're just like, you know, usually it's like a, you know, top five list. Like the last one was like, you know, top six things to do for SEO in 2019, you know, and it's usually like pretty quick, but like fairly actionable stuff, which is cool.
Oh, Neil Patel stuff is great. Yeah, I'm on very few marketing email lists, and Neil Patel is one that I just have kept myself on for a long time because the stuff he puts out there is really valuable. He makes very, very good actionable guys when it comes to digital marketing.
Yeah, he gives a ton of stuff away for free, which, you know, there's not a ton of people doing that these days. You know, it's usually like buy my course or whatever. So that's, I mean, he has all that, but like he almost never plugs his own stuff, which is pretty refreshing.
He doesn't have to, man. He owns so many assets. People will end up buying his stuff anyways, man. Exactly. He has like five different awesome companies you're just going to end up using, even if you don't know that they're Neil Patel stuff.
Exactly. Totally. All right, cool. So did you want to, does anybody have any like follow-up questions or any questions for you know, what we talked about so far, any of the tools, anything like that? Go ahead and I can either unmute you or you can put them in the comments. You can hit raise hand. I think there's an option to do that. If you've got a question, I can unmute you so we can actually hear you, which is fun. If not, then go ahead and drop them in the questions. And we'll wait like, you know, 30 seconds for that. If not, then Danny, you said you had some listing optimization tips that you wanted to go into.
Yeah, I just got a short little presentation built up here about an overview of listing optimization and a lot of the biggest mistakes that people make when they're making their product photos or writing their listing. So you want me to go into that right now?
Yeah, sure. Hold on. Let me drop the this URL for Karen here. InstaZood here is, it's, I'll post it in the chat. There you go. Okay. Yeah. Danny, go ahead.
Awesome. Okay. Can you guys see my screen here?
Yep.
Awesome. Okay. So, this was thrown together in like 2 seconds. So excuse the really ugly looking presentation, but, it's going to just be the basics of what I see most people doing wrong with their listings. I've seen, like, we get hundreds of people coming to us over the last couple of years just with, here's our listing, and how can we make it better? So it's just based off of all that experience. So this one on the left here, what makes a good online listing? So obviously the main image, you can see that's really crisp and clear. It takes up most of the space here. You can tell this guy knows what he's doing. He has a lot of different keywords in his title, which is not necessarily a good thing, but he's obviously spent a lot of time optimizing this, right? He's got these check marks sticking out here. And then over on the right side, this is a really big brand, KitchenAid. You see them all over the stores. They have one image. They have
one single. I always laughed about the big brands. The big brands are the worst.
Totally. A lot of them have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah, clueless on everything. Sorry to interrupt. I just had to laugh because this is literally what I say every time. It's perfect. Go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no worries. And yeah, it's unfortunate because a lot of sellers, they see these big brands with the really simple listings and they see that it's working and they just assume that, oh, I should make my product listing like this too. Yep. When really there it's working in spite of that. It's only because they have a big brand name behind
Exactly. My one I always use is Stanley Tools. Go look up some of Stanley Tools listings and I just shake my head every time. I'm like, oh man, that's why we destroy you.
Oh, you know, it's funny. I think there's actually a Stanley Tools thing later on in this presentation.
Perfect. Yeah. They have bad listings.
Oh, yeah. I think I use them as a photo example. but yeah, they obviously have not filled up much. They've got a few keywords in the title only. Really important to have the keyword phrases that you're targeting in your title, like two or three main phrases. There's really not much information over here. And then photos is a super important thing too. So this one on the left here, you can clearly see everything that's going on. One mistake a lot of people make with the main image is they take it from a direct top-down view, like it's two-dimensional or something like that. If there's multiple things, like there is in this image, they're just going to take a head-on view when it usually looks a lot better to take it at about a 15 degree angle and multi-layer it. You can see here some stuff is in the background, some stuff is in the foreground. That typically looks way better. Instead of most people, they have the box takes up like a third of the entire image because they have a head-on view of it. And then they have the main part of the product is like taking up 20% of the image somewhere over on the left side or something like that.
That's a good way to do it, right? Yeah, that's a good point too. The other thing I see all the time is the cropping. Like people leave too much white space around. You want to get your image as big as possible because it'll pop better. So like, in this case, you would want to crop as close to the edges as possible, to make sure that product is as big and crisp as possible from the search screen.
Oh, absolutely. And it's super easy on these white background images to just get this little either a graphic shadow or graphic reflection effect done. Just go to clippingpathindia.com. I think it costs like 50 cents an image or something like that. And someone will put on this graphic reflection effect. Really makes it pop out against a white background, especially with your main image. You really want to do something like that. Yeah. It was Black & Decker, not Stanley Tools.
Close enough, though. Yeah, they're about the same.
Yeah. Another big thing is a lot of people, I don't think, understand good lighting versus bad lighting. So this is an example that a lot of people would look at the bottom one just by itself, and they'd probably say that is good lighting. But when you look at it compared to the one above it, Black & Decker, it doesn't look very good, right? It looks kind of dull. It just looks really bland. And you got to think that the lighting doesn't have to look good just in the photo by itself. The lighting has to look good against a pure white background, because it's really going to look dull if it's not really good against a pure white background. It's going to look especially dull. So make sure that you use professional studio lighting, because that's really the only way you're going to get that look like this photo above here, that it just really pops, right? It looks professional. The one on bottom is not necessarily like terrible lighting, but it definitely doesn't pop. It just looks like it's sitting there kind of like a meh kind of lighting, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like almost not really blurry, but yeah, it's very dull. Something that you can do, if you get somebody who's pretty solid with Photoshop, they could actually make the bottom one look a little bit more like the one on the top. But like you said, the when you take the photo or when you get the photo done, like the raw photo, the better quality the raw photo is, the better quality the processed photo is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's different levels of salvageable. You can always get someone to literally do a rendering on top of your product. Right. But I mean, that's, you don't want to be doing that. Can cost a lot for someone to do it really well. And it's just not going to look as good initially. Another thing is graphic design photos. A lot of people make the mistake, like the guy on the right, where they have so much text on here and you can't, like, I'm on my 17-inch laptop screen right now and I can't even really read what's going on here. I can't really tell what's going on here. There's too much information. And especially on a mobile screen, if I clicked to zoom in on my mobile screen, I would not be able to read this at all. I would have to click to zoom in and then pinch it and then scroll around to see what's going on. And such a small amount of people are going to actually do that you're missing out on a huge opportunity. Whereas the one on the left, very clearly you can see what's going on in this image. Even if it's on my tiny mobile screen, I could see, oh yeah, okay, it's a 17-ounce bottle. It's this size. You can clearly see the bottle. There's not way too much stuff going on. And so that's one of the biggest mistakes to see with the graphic design images. If there's text on the screen, as a rule, it should be readable on a small mobile screen. And then that means that there's not too much text on there that is well optimized.
Yeah. And like you said, the other good thing about that photo too is they have the background blurred, and in that type of photo is really good because you're bringing the focus back to the product. So you got the foreground and the product super ultra crisp and clear, and then you got the fade in the background with the text over the fade, which that's a really, really good effect.
Totally. It looks so professional that way. And to get that, you need a camera with a shallow depth of field or a really low f-stop. So talk to your photographer about shallow depth of field or low f-stop if you're looking for something like that.
Yeah. And you can also build, you can hire somebody to build that image, but you can also do that fairly easily as long as the starting image is good. And like Canva, we use Canva to build images like that a lot, which works really well, and it's free.
Totally. Yeah. You could get the background removed, like clipped out for like 50 cents by something like Clipping Path India. And then you could layer it against the beach in the background or something. You don't have to go to the beach and get, hire a photographer for $1,000.
Right. Yep. You can use Pixabay and grab a super nice, like lifestyle image and then Photoshop it in.
Absolutely. And the lifestyle images here. So a few things. Well, we just talked about this shallow depth of field, making it a blurry background. Like you can see there, you can see the bicycles in the foreground, but all the competitors are in the background here. And one of the most difficult things about lifestyle images that I think is super important is you want to be able to tell a story. And the story you want to tell is you want the buyer to be able to envision themselves receiving the benefit of the product. So what are you trying to show? What benefit are you trying to show with that lifestyle image? A lot of people, they'll just show a picture of, oh, hey, here's a model, and they're holding the product next to their face and looking into the camera. And it just, right. I cringe every time I see that. It's like, why don't you just put the product on a table and it's going to be just as good of a photo, right? Yeah. So yeah, having the model creepy. Actually enjoying the main benefit. Yeah, it's weird. It just it looks so off.
Yeah, totally. It looks super like a Stephen King, like a TV show or something.
Yeah, absolutely. So like using the model actually, they should be in the act of receiving the main benefit that you're trying to highlight in the photo. Plan it out in ahead. What benefits do you want to show off in the lifestyle images and then actually get that shot? And the last thing I'd mention about that is just focus on the product too. You see a lot of people, it's just like the products, you can't even really see it in the photo. And the model's like, maybe the model looks really hot or something, but it's the product is not a focus of the thing. And people are, they want to buy the product. They don't want to look at pictures of hot models. Plenty of better places to do that on the internet than Amazon.
Yeah, totally.
Keep it to Amazon.
One quick thing to go to, Danny, when somebody's asking. So in a previous slide, there was like the green check marks in the bullet points. Those are UTF-8 characters. So if you just search like UTF-8 emoticons, you can usually find stuff to do that. Now, warning on those, I know tons of people on Amazon do it. Just be careful because technically that can be against TOS. I haven't heard of anyone ever getting in trouble for that. But don't be surprised if, you know, Amazon usually has like something they crack down on. They pick like, you know, in January, we're going to crack down on the green check marks in product listings or, you know, the UTF 8 characters in product listings. So you can do that. Just be careful that, you know, you could be a target for Amazon, you know, if you do that.
Yeah. And it's one of those things, like we do that in all of our client listings and literally have never had a problem with that. And that's hundreds of listings. So yeah. I think it's pretty safe. Certain ones won't work. You just got to use the right ones. Copy and paste it from Google or something.
Yep. And make them relevant. Like we use them on a couple of ours as well. And one of ours is like an outdoor product. So we have like little camp UTF characters on each bullet point. You know, like be creative with those things because there's so many out there that will actually make the listing look cool. And I think that's why Amazon's not cracking down on it, because if it's irrelevant and actually like brings attention to stuff, like, you know, I don't think they care that much.
Yeah, exactly. And the bullet points look so bland anyways, you got to make something stand out. Right. And one of the last things we're talking about here is to be benefit driven, not feature driven. And this is something a lot of people, they think they understand, but they don't understand to the extent that they probably should. So a feature is what something is, and a benefit is what something does. So for example, let's use the example of a microfiber towel. So it's made of microfiber, that's a feature, but soaking up 4 times the water of a regular towel with half the bulk is a benefit. So how did we get from point A to point B there? The ask why 3 times method. Most people stop at 1 or 2 levels. It's like, okay, so why is this good? Oh, it's good because it's made of microfiber and it's more absorbent. So they stop there and that's their main benefit. But really, we should be going 2 layers deeper. So why is it good that it's more absorbent? That's good because it's faster to dry things off. Why is that good? Well, it gives you more fun time by reducing your boring chore time. So that is getting a little bit too far away from a microfiber towel. So we got to tie it back again. So that's how we came to the soaking up 4 times the water of a regular towel with half the bulk right there. It's tying that core benefit back to the actual product. So don't stop at only 1 layer deep, go 2 layers deeper. And this stuff applies not just to your Amazon listing. Do this for the headlines of your Facebook ads. Do this anywhere you're talking about your product. If you can actually find the real core benefit, it's way more powerful than saying something like it's made of microfiber or it's more absorbent than other towels, because people can make those connections in your brain. You want to make that super deep connection in their brain that is better than they can articulate it themselves.
Yeah, you want them to envision that they're using the product. Or enjoying the product.
Totally. And the last slide that I have here, just optimize for the right keywords. So if you're not indexing for a search phrase, you're not going to show up in the search results, right? So you want to be optimized for the right keywords. Identify the top keyword search phrases. You know, keyword research by BuyerLaunch is fairly good. Obviously, Andy's got Seller SEO. It's a good tool as well. Honestly, keyword research by BuyerLaunch, I have some qualms with it these days. I wrote this slide a little while ago. I do have some qualms with that. So I'd honestly rescind that recommendation for keyword research. We still do use it, but we do use other keyword tools as well. Write 2 to 3 of the most important phrases into the title. Any more than that, really, and it starts to become keyword stuffy. We found 3 search phrases in phrase order. So that means like barbecue gloves, heat resistant, for example, if that was a phrase in that exact order. And then test the indexing. This actually doesn't really work anymore. Typing the keyword plus the ASIN into the Amazon search bar. I would use a tool out there that has some other methods of checking the indexing. That used to be the way to do it. And the last thing, don't keyword stuff, right? Don't just put a million things into the title. This is an example below. Try to read through this. House smile, BBQ gloves, heat resistant rubber black cooking glove, silicone grilling glove for kitchen pizza cooking, meat shredding cloth, silicone brush, super value of 4 barbecue accessories. It's just no one can understand what's going on there, right? It looks like some Chinese seller who's just like blasted a listing up there and it looks bad on your brand, right? So that's pretty basic as far as optimizing keywords, but right there, if you just do those things, you're gonna avoid a lot of the mistakes that people make.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to add on that, Danny, I don't know how you do it, but like, and this is kind of how, if people use our listing lightning tool, we've kind of built that in to the process. You know, that tool actually like uses the process that we used to do manually to optimize listings. But for us, so like, for example, if you use those 3 phrases in the title, you want to make sure that you repeat those phrases. We found 3 to be the magic number as well, not only in the title for phrases. So like, you know, 3 separate phrases in the title, like Danny was talking about, but then like going into the bullet points and the description, like if we have like 3 phrases that we're super targeting and we're like, we know that those 3 phrases are going to bring us the most conversions and are the most relevant, we make sure that we list them 3 times throughout the listing besides the title. So like it would be in the title, then we do it in at least 2 bullet points, possibly 3, and then at least 1 time in the description. You can test, you know, that theory differently. But once again, just like the title, bullet points are also ranked by what comes first. So you want to try to make those phrases come earlier in the bullet points, but you also don't want to overdo it and make it like the first one in like every single bullet point, because it'll just look spammy and weird. But try to work those important phrases in throughout the entire listing. That's going to make a huge difference in relevancy and where you show up in search.
Yeah, we actually have the exact same rule. The top 5 main search phrases have to show up in at least 3 sections of the listing. And for each one of those listings, actually now it is the subject matter keywords. All of those are going to be in exact phrase order in the subject matter. I interviewed Kevin King a little while ago for the Actualized Freedom podcast. It's actually coming out on a Wednesday, his episode. And he mentioned this is something that he does with all of his products. He, according to what he's seen, subject matter is the number 2 field when it comes to importance of where to put your keywords after the title. So that's pretty powerful, right? So that's why he puts his top keyword phrases in phrase order in the subject matter. Yep. As well.
Yeah, we do that as well. And we actually use the subject matter, especially for special events. So like, you know, Christmas holiday, we put all our Christmas stuff in there. And then same thing with like, you know, any holidays or things like that, like, you know, stuff that might not make sense in the listing, but is ultra relevant in the wider audience that you're targeting or that could be targeting. So yeah, I definitely agree with that. I've seen that as well, that the subject keywords are ultra relevant and do have a lot of weight in terms of search for Amazon, at least at this point. They're always changing it though, so who knows, right? Who knows what it's going to be next week.
Yeah, this week, that's the way to do it.
Yep. Yep. That's a good point though, too. Something else to think about when you're building these listings is go back to these listings, like, you know, put it as part of your process. You know, maybe do processes that have like expiration dates, and a lot of these tools will do that for you. You know, like Podio, you're saying Podio, maybe Podio has like something where you can kick back after like 2 weeks or whatever back into the queue. And maybe just even have a VA or something like that, you know, go through and look at the listing, and update the listing once in a while too. Now, generally, if you're like killing it on your listing, a lot of people don't mention this, but if you're like doing super well on your listing, it's continuing to climb, you're building rank, everything's going well, generally you don't want to touch it. Because if you do, if you change something, a lot of times Amazon will re-index it and you'll all of a sudden you'll see your ranking plummet. Now, that's kind of frustrating because sometimes you're like, oh, I've got this great new way to like target, you know, this product, or I thought of a different audience I can market this to, which is great and all, but only do that if you're on the decline. If you're steadily increasing or doing really well on that product, don't touch the listing. Like we had one of our best selling items, that's kind of a big holiday item. We didn't touch it since last year. It did so crazy last year that we literally did not touch that listing. And this Christmas we did, like last Christmas we ran out of stock. This Christmas we like made sure we had a ton of stock, and we ended up going through the entire holiday without running out of stock, which was awesome. And the listing just did that much better this year. So we're not going to touch it again. And then next year it's probably going to do the same thing unless we start, you know, seeing a decline. You generally don't want to touch the listing.
Yeah, absolutely. I see a few questions that I got quick answers for. Karen's asking, do you like merchant words? And my answer for that is no. You should not be using merchant words.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. You can run this test yourself. I've seen a video of, I can't remember who it was, but they had a merchant words CSV export from 1 year previous for a search phrase. And then 1 year later, they came back and did the exact same search, and they got the exact same results with the exact same search results, estimates, and everything like that. So, I mean, that to me just tells me that it's complete garbage. Yeah. Well, we can't really argue with that.
Yeah. So the thing that's kind of crummy is that Amazon just closed the data point for keyword volume. So no tools have volume anymore, which makes things a little bit harder. You know, now it's kind of a guess. Like for our listing lightning tool, we have an algorithm that we built that does a really, really good job of telling you what the most important phrases are in terms of like volume and relevancy. But of course, it's a guess. And if any other tool says, "Oh no, we've got it dialed in," they're full of shit, because everybody's using. It's just like Jungle Scout or Viral Launcher, any of these tools that they're collecting data and then using that data and putting it through their own algorithm and making a guess on what these things are, especially now that the volume, that keyword volume's gone. So just be really cognizant of that when you're using different tools. The cool thing is, so our seller SEO keyword tool used to have volume, which was cool because you could take volume and then look at the competition and figure out like what keywords were low competition, high volume. Now that we lost the volume, that sucks because you can't find those gems anymore. But still use or that tool is still really useful because the competition number is usually going to be pretty close to what the volume is going to be. So in other words, if that keyword is the you know, has the most competition, generally, not always, but generally those keywords are going to be the keywords with the highest volume.
Yeah, very good point on that. And another one from David Jones, dashes. He wants to know if dashes are best practice to separate phrases in product titles. So the way I like to do it, I like to have three dashes in the title just to break up. It's almost always, two dashes total to break it up into three sections. It's almost always that, sometimes three dashes.
Yeah.
So the first section of the title will be like main search phrase, the main phrase of the product. The second little section separated by space dash space will be the most important describing information of a product, like, 250 ounces or whatever it is, this style of product, yada, yada, yada. And then the third bit will be either some benefits or other main search phrases for the product, that kind of thing. So I like to separate it into sections instead of like not necessarily separating all the different keywords, but definitely separate it with sections with the dashes, I think looks best. But yeah, really, you can use whatever you want to break it up. Yeah, I just think that the dashes look best.
Yeah, same here. We use dashes as well. You can also use pipes. A lot of people will use pipes. Some people use commas. I agree that dashes look the cleanest, read the best. That's how we do it. and we also, when we build titles, we're also cognizant, which I'm sure you are too, Danny, is to break the title up into, like, try to break that first section up into mobile view so that title looks good on mobile. And I think it's 80 characters For mobile, I have to double check that, but I'm pretty sure it's 80 characters. Anyway, you want to make sure that first section is as good as possible, not only with your main phrase or phrases, but you know that look reads really well, so that on mobile it reads really well. That's pretty important. So
totally, a lot of people forget that the title is also has a lot to do with click through rate too. People are scrolling; they want to know that what they're clicking on is what they're looking for. So you need that really important, relevant information in the first little bit of the title to get people to click on your listing. It's not just all about keywords, right?
No, absolutely. Yep. And then looks like David had another question about bullet points. I'm not sure what you guys do, Danny, but we do we generally try to stick around 250 characters in the bullet points. We go over that sometimes. And a lot of people say not to, but so far in our testing, we seem to index. I think it has more to do with relevancy, but generally we try to stick right around 250 per bullet point. And then product description, the max is 2,000, I think, for most categories. We generally do a minimum of 1,000. So between 1,000 and 2,000, we try to get within that. You know, generally we end up probably around 1,500 is average to what we end up with in the description. I don't know about, what about you, Danny? How do you do that?
For us, the bullet points, we like to keep them around 150 to 170. So really, really tight knit, really close. We like to keep it around only two lines per bullet point so that more people will actually read them. We've actually tested this quite a bit and seen really small conversion rate bumps, moving it down. Also, it can be harder to index a lot more keywords if you have the bullet points are all the way filled out. We've seen some good data to show that the shorter ones seem to be working better for us. And product description, it almost always comes around to about 1,500 characters or so. We have a template that we use where we just go through certain things, you know, call to action at the end and bullet point list in the middle and like kind of frequently asked question sections in there. So usually about 1,500 characters.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So, excuse me. So the other thing that can kind of play into that as well is, you know, different categories of products index differently. So what we do a lot of times is we'll do short and long and we'll A-B test it, not only for conversions, but also to see like if we can index, because, you know, the more characters you can put in there, the more you can index for. So, you know, that's something you should really test on your listing itself. But what you have to be aware of is sometimes if you do super long bullet points, like your fourth or fifth bullet point might not index at all. Like there's some like weird intricacies. So, you know, definitely play with that on your listing and depending on the category that might make a difference.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think gone are the days of like trying to get the most keyword phrases indexed into your listing as possible. Amazon takes relevancy a lot more into effect now, it seems, when it comes to the ranking. So I'd rather have a really tight, super relevant listing with ranking for less search phrases than just try to get like, you know, 250 search phrases all indexed and ranking for in my Amazon listing, because it's probably going to have the opposite effect you want it to. Amazon's going to think your product is something that it's not. Your PPC is not going to work as well. It's just not a good idea anymore.
Yeah. All right. So, All right, cool. I think we've covered everything. Anybody else have any more questions? Please go ahead and drop them. If not, we'll about wrap up. All right, Danny, so are you going to go back to bed?
Back to bed? Heck no, man. I got to wake up for a marathon in like 4 days. The marathon starts at 3 a.m. So I woke up at 4:30 a.m. today and yesterday. So I got to start waking up earlier and staying up, if anything, man. I'm going to be in bed at 8:30.
You got to get practice. You got to do the jump into the ice shower every morning.
Yeah, I used to do that in Canada. I used to have a really cold shower first thing in the morning, but here in the Philippines, the water is not cold enough at all. Like the coldest water setting is like a swimming pool. So unfortunately, can't do that anymore.
go to the ice machine.
Yeah, I have to. That's the only way out here.
There you go. Cool. All right. And Danny, tell everybody, like, you know, plug whatever you want to plug. You know, I know like you have a podcast and your consulting business and all that. Go ahead and plug away.
Yeah, guys. So the Actualize Freedom podcast is all about Amazon stuff. Like I said earlier, I think the Kevin King episode is coming out on Wednesday. I've got Manny Coates on there, some really good guests. Got to get, and I'm talking with Andy about getting him scheduled on here to talk about some SEO stuff too. So that's going to be good. And other than that, guys, you can just reach out to me on Facebook. Just look up Danny Carlson on Facebook. If you have any questions about any of this stuff, I'm happy to respond on Messenger or whatever. yeah, any of the stuff, listing optimization is good.
Cool. All right, Danny, we'll appreciate you getting up early. And yeah, thanks a lot for joining us. Yeah, it looks like a lot of people are going to catch us on replay because we had 40 people sign up, but we only ended up with about 10. But I know that we'll keep growing. And for the first episode, the first real episode, that's not too shabby. Anyway, cool, Danny, appreciate it. And yeah, hopefully next time, this builds more and more. In the beta version of this, we did where everybody could could jump in and kind of ask via voice, not just text, which was really fun. So if you guys follow me, go and check back through my feed or in the Amazon FBA Titans group, and you'll see the replay on that. It's pretty cool. There was a lot of really good Q&A, so check that out. And thanks again, Danny. And we'll hopefully set a time so I can jump on with you.
Yeah, absolutely, man. We'll get that interview face going. Boom. Yeah,
there we go. All right, Danny. Take care, man.
All right. Cheers, Andy. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for live Q&A and bonus content after the recording at sellerroundtable.com. Sponsored by the ultimate software tool for Amazon sales and growth, SellerSEO.com and AmazingAtHome.com.